Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. This is still Constitution Week all week long. I have no idea why they make it Constitution Week instead of just celebrating and making the Constitution a holiday. That, and as a matter of fact, I know I've mentioned this before, but it's worth pointing out, every state in the Union should create a mandated holiday for the day they enter the Union. So as they ratified or as they were accepted into and established themselves as a state within the Republic, that day they should actually celebrate as their birthday. But it's more than just a birthday. It is the stakeholder day. It's the day they became a stakeholder over the Constitution. They became an arbiter, and they became literally a champion for liberty. And so with that, let me kind of move forward with my usual diatribe, because we're going to get into the last three, hopefully four, actually the last four, Article 4, 5, 6, and 7, because those are really relatively short. They're relatively easy. They're not as relatively ignored and violated as the previous three. So we should be able to fly through those today, which means on Friday, because I don't have time to go through all the amendments and so forth. So what I'm probably going to do, because I think there's merit in doing that, let's plan on Bill of Rights Week, which is the 15th of December, which is when the Bill of Rights were ratified. Let's plan on doing that week, the Bill of Rights, as well as the amendments, as much as we can kind of cover. And then what I'll try to do is find specific days of any amendments that I couldn't cover, and so forth and so on. That way, we at least kind of cover them on an annual basis. Why is this important? Some people go, well, why is it so important? Why do kids have to read the scriptures? Why is it best that we read the scriptures on a regular basis? Now, most any good Christian will tell you that by reading the scriptures on a regular basis, this is how you can identify false doctrines and you can identify what the truth is. It's the same thing with our founding documents. Without reading the Constitution, without reading the ratification debates, without reading the Federalist Papers, without reading these documents, you do not understand what these documents mean, and you can't recognize the false doctrines or the perversions that have been going under our very nose for two centuries. So with that, let me move forward. This show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org. It is also sponsored by 1798part2.org, as well as republicreview.org. What I'm probably going to do is I'm creating a webpage of the endorsements, organizations that have endorsed Republic Review on the Reclaiming the Republic website. So that page will probably, I'm hoping to get it up this weekend, and hoping to actually have it visible so that everybody can go there and click on the links to go to those other supporting sites so that you can start engaging directly with all of those who I've got actual hard endorsements. And so that way you can kind of start looking at, and I'm actually going to post those endorsements as well. I think that it's one thing to say I've got the endorsement, but it's another thing to actually print it out or put a PDF so that you can actually read what the Constitution or G. Edward Griffin and what these other people have said regarding Republic Review. So with that, the number to call in if you want to discuss anything, it would be, because what we're discussing today is the Constitution, so that would be the anything. But the number today is 215-867-8255, and pay attention, we've kind of changed it a little bit. It's 215-TOP-3. talk. So if you're interested in pitching or giving me a concise thought or what have you, by all means, but I do want to get through the Constitution today. And that way we can kind of get into some of the things that have been kind of grinding on everybody, like the Kavanaugh appointments. And you cannot be surprised how the subjugists, or I should say the Platonists, those who believe in promoting subjugation and slavery, which is Plato's Republic, you can't be surprised that they're going to do anything and everything they possibly can within their means to stop and thwart anything that they believe is a threat to their progress. That's why they're called the Progressive Party. It has nothing to do with good progress. It has everything to do with regressive progress. Anyway, my real quick groveling, if you have a phone, if you have a computer, you're literate and savvy with those devices, those little computers in your hand, because that phone is technically a little computer. If you're savvy on those things, you can actually do a lot of research. There's a lot of things you can do. So if you want to get involved, by all means, you can reach out to me with info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, or you can connect with all of these other organizations that have actually endorsed and are working with me. And one great organization that is there for you that you can actually engage in and actually find people in your home state and so forth. Because I believe in every state in the union, when I have that talk with Keith again, I'll find out. But the Constitution Club is an awesome resource so that you can actually start getting engaged. Because there's no doubt in my mind, this is the worthy cause that has to be forwarded. This is what has to move forward if we are going to save the Constitution. I defy anybody to give me any good evidence that we have more than enough time to meander down this road that we will be able to save our Constitution, you know, at a minute's notice, or, you know, there's really no threat, because all indications are that we have just barely 2 to 5 years to be able to survive as a republic before we go over that precipice. So with that, I also wanted to let you know that I did look in the news. I looked and scanned, and there is no sign. There is no way a tyrant is going to give up any authority or any power that they have over their minions, or, you know, over us, the people, we the people. So we the people actually have to stand up, we have to assert ourselves, and we have to take back all of those things that they have usurped from us. And that's literally what we have to do. We have to take those things back. So with that, I am going to dive straight into Article 4. And so Article 4, Section 1, starts off with, "Full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state, and the Congress may by general laws prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereof." Now, I want to be very clear here. Everything in this section is contingent upon one thing: that everything that these acts, records, and proceedings are doing, and these general laws prescribed in the manner of such acts, records, and proceedings, everything that they are doing must be within the enumerated powers of the Constitution. If they are creating an act, if they are creating a proceeding or anything that is reaching out beyond those hard, fast limits of the Constitution, the enumerated powers, because obviously this does not create any enumerated power in Article 4, Section 1. Nothing. It just basically says that the full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, blah, blah, blah. So there is no new power enumerated in this. Section 2. "The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states." Now, I will tell you that this is not being applied, because there are some states that are being held to different levels of liberty. So if you look at the difference between New Hampshire and you look at the difference between California or Illinois regarding gun laws, the privileges and immunities are not the same, and that every citizen is not enjoying those same privileges and immunities within those. Now, prior to the 14th Amendment, that didn't really matter. This little clause right here didn't mean much. But after the 14th Amendment, it meant a lot because states could no longer deprive people of their, basically, it was like the Civil Rights Act. Nobody could be deprived, but the difference is the 14th Amendment was actually constitutionally, or, well, I'll put it up there, questionably, quote unquote, ratified. And it is a part of the Constitution where the Civil Rights Act is not. But the whole point here is that these privileges and immunities of the citizens of the several states, after the 14th Amendment, they started passing Jim Crow laws, they started passing all of these laws, and these have been violations. Only the Supreme Court has been actually sponsoring and supporting these stupid oppressive laws like Separate But Equal and Plessy v. Ferguson and these other stupid laws that actually are violating the Constitution because they keep on reaching outside those hard boundaries. And as you can tell, I'm at a hard break. So if you stay tuned, we're going to finish up Article 4 and then we'll go straight into Article 5 and 6. So we'll be right back after a word from my sponsors. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Yes, and so as I had just moved into the next, if you want to call it, clause in Section 2, this is a good one, and I want you to pay attention because this has a lot of teeth. A person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime who shall flee from justice and be found in another state shall, on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled, or he or she, be delivered up to be removed from the state having jurisdiction of the crime. So, in other words, if a state decides to charge somebody with treason, then that state actually has judicial authority over that individual that may be there, may not be there, may be actually in some place like D.C., and that District of Columbia or any other state in the Republic will absolutely have to surrender that person for the judicial, or I should say for the jurisdiction of that particular state, because it has been granted to the states that they have that authority. No person held to service, now this was added after the 13th Amendment, no person held to service or labor in one state under the laws therefore or thereof escaping into another shall, in consequence of any law or regulation therein, be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered up on claim of the party of whom such service or labor may be due. Now, you got to remember that back in these days, they actually still had indentured servants, and I'm not talking about slaves, but I am talking about indentured servants. And I do know that with the 14th Amendment, the 14th Amendment really kind of drew the line where states could no longer even pass laws that allowed for any type of oppressive laws like the Jim Crow laws. Those types of laws were, and the way they got around those with the help of the Supreme Court just absolutely infuriates me. But Section 3, Article 4, Section 3, new states may be admitted by the Congress into this union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned as well as of the Congress. So, in other words, so this is the equal footing clause, by the way, folks, that when states come into the union, they will come in with equal footing, that they will be admitted by Congress into this union, that the youngest state, like Hawaii, doesn't have to pay or doesn't have its resources held against it or leveraged or anything like that. Every state that comes into this union comes in on equal footing. And that's what that was the equal footing clause. So this next one, the second part of Section 3, the Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. So if you go to Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17, that's where you'll find that property and or needful buildings. Now, let's keep in mind, a territory is an area that has not become a state. They had territories back then that actually the federal government and Congress kind of had rules and regulations in managing those as those were supposedly to be developed. And what the federal government did was they had lotteries and they actually had claim days where you could actually go out and stake your claim for your land and build your home and homesteading and all of that to help build and develop the Republic and moving families and people across the face of this continent. And so in doing so, Congress had the ability to help those territories develop into states. And that's the only reason that they had this power to dispose of and have rules and regulations respecting these territories and our property. Military bases is federal property, and military bases is not actually owned by the federal government. It is actually leased to for a long period of time. So, I mean, every military base that I know of, I'm not aware of any that is actually federal property permanently, constitutionally, I should say. Because if you look at a good example, most people look at the public lands as literally federal property. That's not constitutional. The federal government has no role, responsibility, or power in holding and exercising. As I've talked about before, they don't have the ability to create and take away state land for any form of reservation, whether that reservation is for people, whether that reservation is for timber, for resources, whatever it is, or whether it be for wildlife reserves. They have no authority within the Constitution of being able to do that. So here's my favorite one. This is the next section. This is section 4. And this actually starts off with the guarantee clause. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. Now, this is where I go on and on, and I just highly recommend you listen to my podcast where I talk about the republican form of government. In America, a basic description of a republican form of government is a representative form of government. In America, during the Constitutional Convention, Roger Sherman literally delineated that there are two sovereigns that are identified within this republic. The people are the sovereigns, and they're the ultimate sovereigns. However, the states and or the sub-element of government within the republic and the sub-republics, because each state is supposed to be a republican form, that's what it just says here, a republican form in government. And so the states are broken down into counties, and counties are that sub-element of government within that state. Therefore, the counties are supposed to have equal representation in their Senate in the state. And that's why every state had bicameral legislative bodies until Nebraska kind of tripped across the line and goes, why do we need to do that? And nobody could really identify why they needed to do that. So they were the only state that created a unicameral and a nonpartisan legislative body, as if there is such a thing, as we have learned and we know, as we see people so ideologically wired. There is no such thing as a nonpartisan body of government or any type of office and or position, regardless of whether it is the assessor or the DMV. Believe me, if you've got a human behind that counter or desk, you have a partisan person, because they have been ideologically wired to function, think, and operate the way they do based on those ideologies that they embrace. Anyway, moving on, and shall protect, so the United States is to guarantee this republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion. This is being ignored and violated, because allowing the illegal aliens to come in and run amok and actually allow them to create this economic impact on all the states is just, I can't fathom why we would let this happen, other than the fact that the people that are promoting this are literally working to undermine our constitutional republic. Moving on, the next part of this, and on application of the legislator or of the executive when the legislator cannot be convened, against domestic violence. So that means that, I'll go back to this, and shall protect each of them against invasion and upon and on application of the legislator or the executive when the legislator cannot be convened. So I didn't want to trip over this, because this is important. The legislatures are the sovereigns. That's what this basically just kind of helped you through. Because when the legislators cannot be convened, then the executive can, against domestic violence, you know, make an application to the federal government to say, hey, we need help. We've got this civil unrest. We have this invasion occurring. We need help. Every other essence of reaching out to the federal government must be done by the state legislators, unless they cannot be convened into session. So, just to understand, it is, and that's why my focus is on this new number, 7,383 legislatures that are actually out there. And I hope I got that right, but I know somebody's listening that'll probably correct me. But I know it's no longer 5,445. So I think it's 7,383 or 7,363, something like that. Anyway, those are the folks that we have to focus in educating and getting them to understand this Constitution. And so if you have a legislator that you have a good relationship with, you should ask them, when's the last time you read the Constitution? And if they say, well, I really haven't, then you should tell them, well, you should listen to G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, because he actually reads the Constitution on Constitution Week. So maybe you don't have to. He'll actually read it to you. So at least you know what it says. Because they have to raise their arm to the square, and they have to take an oath, a sacred oath, that they will protect and defend and obey the Constitution. Sometimes in some states, it's only support, but that's still enough that they cannot do things that are undermining the Constitution. They have to support it. Anyway, Article 5 is the next step, and as you can hear, I'm actually up at that hard break again. So as I anticipated, I am about more than halfway through what I needed to cover. So we'll get 5 and 6 and 7 done right after we come back from the break. So please stay tuned. I'll be right back after this. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. All right, so this next part, Article 5, most people, oh yeah, that's the amendment process. Actually, it has two parts to it. So it talks about how you amend the Constitution. But they put at the very bottom of this, I truly believe most people have never read this, but they put at the very bottom of Article 5 what is referred to by some as the Amendment Protection Clause. But let me get into Article 5. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress. Now, I want to point out here that that right there is the process of how the Constitution can be changed. This is the mechanism, and the only mechanism, that the federal government can assume any new role, responsibility, or power, such as, let's say the federal government wants to get into the business of healthcare. They want to be constitutional and they want to have the authority delegated to them by the states per this contract. That is the only mechanism for them to be able to obtain that role, responsibility, and power from the states. So therefore, if you find, and when we go through Republic Review, we're going to find all sorts of things that they never followed that process. Now, here's the Amendment Protection Clause. Provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article. Now, I went over that, and that was literally the shutting down the slave trade and the state's ability to importing persons into the United States. And here's the kicker, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So I want you to understand, what is a state? In the understanding of the Constitution, in an understanding this concept that Sherman had brought forward in this compromise, a state is a sovereign. When we talk about your sovereignty, your ability to vote is affixed to that. And when they talk about a state, that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate, that means that the sovereign, the state, cannot be deprived of its equal suffrage if they did not give consent to some amendment that would take it away from them. In other words, let's say Utah and those seven other states that I've pointed out before have actually gone down this path of not or rejecting, because Utah has rejected, and I think six other states have failed to even ratify or even consider the 17th Amendment. So those seven states are not bound by the 17th Amendment, because right here, this Amendment Protection Clause protects them from losing and being deprived of their suffrage in the Senate, their ability to vote and have representation. So there you go. We can actually open up, I think it's a nice hornet's nest in challenging both, one, the 17th Amendment, and actually who has jurisdiction over the Constitution. And I'm hoping, because I know Keith wants to move this forward, I'm hoping that the Constitution Club gets a lot of you involved in this, so that you can actually, if you live in Oklahoma, if you live in a state that has been very vocal about the 17th Amendment, he's going to start working, I hope, with all of you to get you to start working on rejecting the ratification or rescinding one's ratification and rejecting the 17th Amendment. Because the 17th Amendment, because they started allowing other states to change their position, that means that both sides of the position can be changed. You can't have a door swing one way in a true just system. So we want, and what we want to do is we want to get Oklahoma, we want to get Wyoming, we want to get the Dakotas, we want to get these red states to literally stand up and rescind their ratification and say, we no longer recognize the 17th Amendment and we're no longer giving our consent, and actually start appointing their senators based out of the state legislature. You want to see the globalists and the establishment and the swamp rise up in as much of a tidal wave as they can muster? And I'm going to tell you, my friends, that the states, because of their authority and sovereignty, if you get enough states standing up, you will literally bring asunder the 17th Amendment, and it will be done just like that. So, moving forward, Article 6, all debts contracted and engagements entered into before the adoption of this Constitution shall be as valid against the United States under this Constitution as under the Confederation. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. This whole part of this clause has been egregiously violated because the Supreme Court and the federal government constantly use this supremacy clause as their authority of being able to do anything and everything. However, as I read Marshall's statement about this last week, as well as Madison, as well as Nichols, as well as a lot of other framers, they all clearly said that it is all in pursuance of, in other words, they are making laws that they actually have the authority to make. They cannot make laws that they have not been delegated the authority and jurisdiction over. So I just want to be very clear on this. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Now, this is where I will go back to the Madison's veto of the bonus bill. If you understand what that last line said and why the federal government had to stay within its boundaries, is because all of a sudden everything, if Congress decided that they had this ability, then everything, it would literally wipe out the judicial system. It would wipe out everything, and everything would then fall under the jurisdiction and discretion of Congress. And that's even that term discretion was mentioned by Thomas Jefferson in the Kentucky Resolution. So that's really important for you to get your arms kind of around that the federal government is literally bound, hard, fast bound to staying within those enumerated powers. I cannot emphasize that enough, and how they've actually wiggled their way to a position into being able to create laws over healthcare and over energy and all of these things just gives me a headache. However, the final clause or final part of Article 6 is this. The senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath of affirmation to support the Constitution. I want to stop right there because John Rowland has this correctly identified, because guess who doesn't have to say an oath to supporting the Constitution? Jurists. That's right. Judges and judicial officers have not had to raise their arm to the square, but clearly right here in the Constitution, it says, and I'll read it again, the senators and representatives both mentioned and the members of the several states' legislatures and all executives and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by an oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. Do you get it now? Why is it that judges no longer, go read a judge's oath and you will find that he's not bound to supporting the Constitution? Because they convinced people to think, oh no, we're going to just bound ourselves to being impartial. No, 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 no. There's a reason why they put this in the Constitution. And let's be clear, they've been able to sidestep this because now they aren't held under oath in supporting the Constitution. That's why they've been able to make all of these types of decisions and so forth. So that one clause is a huge problem, or it's been violated to a point where we need to bring back the awareness. And as a matter of fact, I highly assert that if a person is going to become a registered voter for the first time, or when they move to a state for the first time, they have to take an oath of citizenship, that they have to put their arm up to the square, because now you're going to partake in our political system. You have to take the oath of citizenship. And that then binds them to having to support, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. But I digress. Let me go a little bit further. But no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. Now, as you can tell, I'm at a hard break, so I've got one more segment to get into, and I want to go through this religious test, and then we'll get into the ratification or Article 7 and wrap this up today. This religious test is a huge holdup for us, and we need to shift our paradigm on this, but we'll have to do that after the break. So I'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And as we're just going into break, I pointed out that no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust. Huh. Now, let me ask you a question. What is a religious test? What faith are you? Well, yeah, that could be a religious test. Do you believe in Christ? Yeah, that could be a religious test. How about this, though? Do you believe homosexuality is a sin? That's a religious test. Do you believe that marriage should be between a man and a woman? That's a religious test. Do you believe that, let me see here, that rights are ordained by government? Well, that's definitely a religious test, and that's definitely a violation of our founding principles of our culture and our nation. I want to put this into a perspective for you, that every time a person gets up and talks about, do you believe in abortion? Do you believe in the right, you know, to choice? When people get and go down that road, and they start asking questions in a political forum, they are literally subjecting themselves to a political and a religious test. I want you to understand that. And so our kids, the kids today, and there's an organization out there called We Believe We Vote. There's a lot of different Christian organizations, and they mean well. I truly believe that they mean well, but what they're doing is they're basically putting it's almost like a yellow star on the, you know, the lapel or on, you know, the coat and the outer garments of an individual, like they did in Nazi Germany. Well, this is a Jew, or now this is a Christian, because the kids are learning in school that Christians are radicals. Christians can't be trusted, and you don't want to vote for them because they're radical. They want to take away your ability to enjoy sex and to enjoy life. And that's not right. That's not fair. They want to enforce their ideals upon you. And actually, that's the real misnomer. Christianity is somebody that should believe in free agency, accountability, and responsibility, and that is what liberty is. And as I go through the scale of liberty, I clearly define and delineate when I talk about Platonism. You know, they're the two opposite ends on the scale of liberty. The person that is on the side of liberty does not want a person to be compelled to do anything, wants that person to, you know, make their own decisions and try to help them make the most informed decisions that they possibly can. And that is Christ-like. The person on the other end of that is, we will compel you, we will force you, you can't think, you have no other alternative options, this is what you have to do, and that is evil. But because we've been allowing ourselves to, you know, whether we want to be as proud as a peacock and show our colors that we stand for these things, I am telling you that the kids are becoming programmed and they're becoming attuned to, oh, you know, who are the Christians? Because we don't want to vote the Christians in, especially in these far progressive dark blue states. It is happening in the red states, and that's how red states are turning blue. As more and more kids are coming into the electorate, after they've been indoctrinated about the evils and the dogma of Christianity, these kids are so scared they will not ever vote for a Christian until their paradigm shifts. And like I've said, in the 2 to 5 years that we have left, if we do not stop this, because the wave of 10 million kids every year that's hitting the electorate will be very overwhelming, because it's a very slow and long process to deprogram and, you know, to retool those kids into thinking like rational adults. So let me move on to Article 7, because this is the final statement, and it is the ratification. Now, what does the word ratification mean? That means the formal process of accepting a compact or contract. So the ratifications, or the formal acceptance of a compact of the conventions of the 9 states, shall be sufficient for the establishment of this compact or this constitution between the states, so ratifying the same. And so I just want you to understand that what we just went through in these 7 articles, the first 6, it took, because the framers pointed to the divine hand of providence in inspiring them and creating this constitution, one has to look at this in that type of model, that the Constitution, or the good Lord, created this republic through these great framers and these great-minded men in 6 articles, just like he created the heavens and the earth in 6 days. And on the 7th, in the heavens and the earth, he rested and he sanctified it and made it holy. But in our Constitution, he rested the power and authority in the states in this 7th article, because that's exactly what happened. This Constitution, this is just a piece of paper until, by the conventions of 9 states, sufficiently ratify, formally accept this compact and establish this compact as the Constitution between the states, so ratifying the same. And so there you have it, my friends. You actually now have gone through, over the past 4 days, including today, the reading the Constitution. If you ever have the compunction of doing this again, the podcast will be up for you to actually listen, so that you, if you're driving along, you go, you know what, I want to hear that Constitution again. Let me just drive along, and you can actually hear it along with my editorializing on what the violations are, what this means, and so forth. But that's why we kind of go through this, and more importantly, why we actually go through the ratification debates. Because what is this ratification? It is the formal process of accepting a contract. And when you're going through the negotiation processes of accepting a contract, the ratifying process, anything that is stated that affirms that this is what this means, or clearly defines or delineates the definition of, or anything like that, when they say that this is what this means, that becomes legally binding. Those words written on paper in the ratification debates were actual amendments to the Constitution to help clarify and to help define what everything meant. That is why I stress this. The ratification debates, when you look at the Federalist Papers, they're nice. And they were really brilliant men, and they happen to be the same guys that actually worked in the state conventions for ratifying. Both Hamilton was up in New York, Madison was down in Virginia, and I forget where Jay was. I know Jay was a part of it too, but nevertheless, the whole point is that the Federalist Papers were not words that were being uttered to the delegates in getting them to coalesce or to actually acquiesce in agreement on ratifying this Constitution. So in other words, if I promise you that I'm going to give you a dollar a day if you sign this contract with me, then and you sign this contract and I don't give you a dollar a day, I'm in breach of contract. These men got up and promised that the federal government was limited by these things. And that is a breach of the contract if they're not doing those things. I hope this clarifies and I hope this helps illuminate just how important it is. And that is why I truly believe it is paramount that if we don't read these things on a regular basis, and why we want to take the time during Constitution Week to read these, so that we can recognize what and how far limited. Did you hear me say anything in the past 4 days about healthcare other than the fact that it didn't say anything about healthcare? Did you hear me say anything about education, that the federal government had the authority over education? No, it doesn't have any authority over energy. You know, they had energy back then. They burnt logs. They had wax candles. They had all sorts of different forms of energy. They had food. Food's energy for the human body. But the point is that the federal government didn't have any authority and they did not have any powers delegated to them over those things. But they're in every facet of those things today. And it is paramount that I point this out to you, that you have to understand that they need to relinquish these things back to the states, that the states need to do this. That way we have the perfect system working again, because then we have one state being able to try, you know, bad things if they want to. Now, I will just say this, that there is a call, and there should be a call, that the good people of every state re-examine their constitution, because you don't want to have an open-ended constitution. I highly recommend that the every state kind of, you know, get their arms around the, you know, the Civil Rights Act and make sure that there is nobody that is being discriminated against, that making sure that everybody has equal rights and suffrage under the law, that we have all equal footing, not equal outcome. And with that, I truly believe that we as a republic will thrive beyond imagination. We'll be able to harness our resources and the economic engine in every single state and relinquish those binds and those threads and those controls that the federal government has inflicted upon the states, as it has lured the states into believing that it depends on them, or the states depend on the federal government, want to be clear here, and that they cannot do it without them. They no longer have that spell. We have broken the spell here. I am G.R. Mobley. I'm reclaiming the Republic, and we're going to get into all of the things that's kind of happened this week and the importance of the ratification debates some more, because I have some more highlights out of the ratification debates for tomorrow. God bless, and I'll be back tomorrow. Thank you so much. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.